Hello, and welcome to the Accountability Coach podcast, where we discuss proven business success principles related to helping you make more money and work less so you can enjoy having your ideal business and your ideal life. This is Ann Bachrach. Today, we have a special guest with us who I know you will find to be very knowledgeable as it relates to the entrepreneur's mindset and smashing our limiting beliefs that are holding us back from being even more successful. Katarina Polanska is a high-performance executive relationship coach and the founder of the Ultimate Match Method. She has a master's degree from the University of Oxford. She helps successful executives and entrepreneurs become as accomplished in their relationships as they are in their careers. Using her 12-step process based on the behavioral science of attraction, disheartened executives can create their ultimate relationship fast and become successfully in love. Welcome, Katarina. We really appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, even though what you talk about is a lot about relationships, you also delve into mindset and limiting beliefs. So now I'm curious, what do you think is the best morning practice for a busy entrepreneur to help get us in the right mindset before we start our busy day?
Love that question. So maybe I can share the morning routine that I've landed on for myself, which honestly is on the back of like 5 years of trying to figure this out, probably like more like 15 years, but 5 years in the more rigorous practice. And what that really looks like is I have a kind of like a visualization and meditation that I listen to first thing as soon as I wake up. So when I know that my brain waves are in the right state to receive that kind of subconscious messaging, I roll over, you know, get my headphones out, plug into that meditation visualization on whatever the positive thing is that I want to be priming my mind for. And I listen to that. That's kind of typically 20 minutes or so. Then get up and get my journal out and start writing out what is the intention for the day. What is the goal for the day? And then three things I'm grateful for, three things I'm excited about. I find that excitement is such a wonderful emotion to bring in that morning. And then I look at my to-do list. And then I get really curious about, is there any kind of like negative sensation or negativity that I'm feeling in my body at that point? Because there might be some resistance coming up to what I'm seeing the day ahead, right? So there might be like a meeting that I'm nervous about, or a difficult conversation that I'm dreading, or it might be that I'm looking at like my sales numbers and they're not looking great. So I kind of check in with it. Is there anything unpleasant that's coming up as I look at that day? If there is, which I mean, we're all human, so often there is, I then look at like, what is the belief behind that? Like, what do I believe about this? And it might be that I don't believe I can succeed, or I believe this is going to go badly. And that's when I dive into one of the things that I call like limiting belief releases, which I can share now or I can share later in the show. I mean, you tell me. But I do a bit of limiting belief releasing that morning, every morning. And then get on with my day.
Well, as long as we're going with it, let's just go with it, Katarina, and go on to the limiting beliefs releases. I love that.
Yeah, sure. So in all of my work with limiting beliefs, the thing that I found to be most effective, but kind of the missing piece of the puzzle that a lot of the limiting belief practices I didn't see is what I call like the limiting belief release. And what that really is it's kind of like tapping into the trapped emotion or the kind of the stress that is trapped in my body around whatever it is that I'm believing. So like really leaning in to that feeling of discomfort and almost like letting myself sit with it, ruminate with it, and just fully explore all of that discomfort that I might be feeling around whatever it is that I'm believing to be true, whatever the negative limiting belief is. Like really feeling that emotion. And if it's quite strong, which often it can be, I'll be consciously kind of like breathing it out through my mouth and like expelling the emotion and the energy behind it. And I do that for a few minutes. And then by the end of that, I normally will notice that, okay, like the emotion's kind of dissipated a little bit. I'm feeling a little bit more calm and grounded. And at that point, I will think about, okay, to what extent is like that belief true? Or do I know that this belief is true for sure? No, of course I don't think that plays true. So then I think about, okay, what are some five, if I have a long day, you know, if I have a lot of time in the morning, I'll do like 15. What are like 5 to 10 bits of evidence for this belief not being true? And then I disprove that belief. And then I give myself an alternative, more helpful belief. And I kind of really like lean into that and try to embody the sensations and the emotion of that new positive belief. And then I get about my day. This all might sound like it's really long. It's actually not that long at all when you get into the rhythm and you've kind of fine-tuned the practice. It can be done within like 10 minutes, but it's super, super powerful. Such a great way to prime the brain and start the day on the positive foot.
Absolutely. I love that. And so many times we do think that things take forever and they don't. So we really have to pay attention to, hey, how is this going to help me really start my day to get the outcomes that I want, even if it does take 10 minutes of my day? That's going to be a positive thing for me to do, or 15 minutes of my day. That's the best way I can get my day started to give myself the highest probability to get my outcomes. Now, you talked about changing that belief. So even though the belief isn't true, you have evidence to the effect that that's not true. How then do you actually change that? So now you've got the positive belief and you've gotten rid of what was trapped inside.
Yeah, great question. And I honestly, if anyone has an answer to this that can help that belief be changed faster, I'm here for it. Because whilst I have the techniques that I found that I'm, you know, I love these techniques and they work, I'm always looking for more. So I love that you asked this. The way I do it is I kind of work on the premise that we want to be reprogramming working with the subconscious mind and reprogramming it, right? Because we know that the subconscious mind drives so much of our behavior. And so we know that to reprogram the subconscious mind, we need emotion plus repetition. The more emotion that you can bring and embody as you're repeating the new positive belief, the more likely it's going to anchor in your psyche. So that's partly why I start with releasing the emotion, or kind of allowing that negative emotion or the unpleasant emotion to kind of process out in order to dispel it, before then finding a new alternative, more positive belief, kind of finding some bits of evidence to anchor why that positive new belief is true, and then really kind of repeating it and almost like installing it into my subconscious whilst feeling and embodying the positive emotion. One of my little hacks that I really like to do with this is, if it's a sunny day, I like to kind of face the sun and feel the warm rays of the sun on my face and almost kind of let that sunshine like warm my body, kind of go down my entire body and like really soften me. That really kind of feels that like positive feeling, just like I'm feeling it now. I can't even speak. It's just like a really positive entrenchment of that new belief, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally makes sense. Then how do we, I guess, the repetition obviously is important. How do we then really almost get it to be a habit, for lack of a better word? So we're really transforming what's trapped to now, you know, be gone, basically, because we've got evidence supporting that that's not really a positive, or it is a limiting belief. And so we don't have to keep doing the repetition as much. How do we make that more of a habit in our life?
Yeah. So with that, the way I've always done it is I try to install as many kind of subconscious reminders of that new positive habit. And that might be something, it might be something as kind of seemingly trivial as wearing a certain type of clothing or a certain type of fabric, right? So if I'm trying to help people, which I often do in my work, and help them with installing new positive beliefs about their self-worth, about their capability, about who they are, and I mean this kind of specifically in like self-confidence and relationships, I tell them, you know, like, you want to get some fabrics that feel good. You want to have the kind of synesthetic feeling of what it feels to feel good, and to really kind of, again, embody that and bring that sensory experience, so that you're constantly getting reminded of this positive new belief that you are in fact worthy, that you are in fact worthy of having good things happen to you. Then also, you know, the classic ones of writing on the post-it notes and having on your laptop and having on your phone screen, and all the kind of, again, subconscious cues and reminders. That's also incredibly helpful, even if it feels very simple. And then kind of lastly, again, working with the body, is we want to be installing that new positive belief whenever we get triggered into the old one, into the old kind of more negative belief. And so with that, I tend to use touch as a really fast way to help people anchor back into the new positive belief. So for example, let's say, and I'm thinking about personal relationships and kind of personal confidence, let's say somebody's feeling triggered and a core wound or like a core belief is flaring up and they're spiraling into a kind of a limiting belief cycle. If they can remember that just putting your hand, and this is one of the things I teach, putting your hand on your heart and just kind of like stroking the heart area is kind of like the new response to do, then that can already anchor the new belief, which is, I'm okay, I am safe, I am worthy, I've got this, and whatever other kind of positive mantras and positive new beliefs are being installed. So kind of remembering to use the body to remind the brain to catch up, if that makes sense.
Oh, totally. Anchoring is great. And coming up with just some simple things can be so powerful for us. Mm-hmm. So that's a really great example. What are some common limiting beliefs that you see that entrepreneurs have at all levels? Do you see some commonalities there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most common, well, I was actually going to say two. One of them is absolutely the kind of the worthiness belief, right? This kind of belief that I am somehow not worthy of having X, Y, and Z, which is completely trivial. I mean, it's not linked to any kind of factual bit of evidence, right? Like everyone's got an unworthiness wound to an extent. So the unworthiness wound is really big and a really important one to work through. And actually probably one of the hardest ones to work through because it's so ingrained from our childhood, but also just any kind of beliefs around fears. So pretty much anything that we kind of struggle with is really boils down to fear, right? And fear is just going to be kind of an amalgamation of a series of limiting beliefs, whether it's I'm afraid that I'm going to fail, and I'm going to fail because I'm somehow not good enough, or I'm somehow not worthy to succeed. It's typically like kind of looking at the fear and then drilling down into what's the real wound beneath that, and how whenever we feel fear, it's typically a really good pointer to all of the limiting beliefs that we have beneath that fear, right? So if there's like a fear of failure, a fear of not succeeding, same thing, a fear of not being good enough, a fear of getting it wrong, a fear of, yeah, maybe people will laugh. I mean, whatever the fear is, typically beneath that fear is going to be that worthiness wound of I'm somehow not worthy, or the good enough wound, I'm somehow not good enough. Both of these are obviously core, big, big, big limiting beliefs that need to go, but are really hard to budge sometimes.
Yeah, so many fears. I mean, I hear so many times, you know, people talking about, you know, fear of picking up the phone to make a phone call to a prospective client, you know, fear of being too salesy or coming off as a schmuck, or fear of, you know, just so many, just some basic things. And then when they actually do these things, and you've probably heard this a million times over, when they actually do these things that they're afraid of, what was I so afraid of? That person didn't respond like I envisioned they were going to be, so negatively. They were actually nice. It was really a nice conversation, or they actually bought something from me, or whatever it might be. Do you experience that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's that saying, isn't there, that the thing, well, I think the saying's been kind of butchered, but like the thing that you really want is just on the other side of fear, or other side of taking action, or whatever it is. But it's true, our fears are so often unfounded, right? And often the fears aren't even ours. They're just fears from our parents or society or whatever other voice that we've subconsciously inherited.
Yeah, absolutely. So in kind of keeping with our theme, how do you recommend that we keep imposter syndrome at bay as a successful entrepreneur? So we're already successful in our own right. We obviously all want to go to our next level. So how do we really keep that imposter syndrome from flaring up?
I love that. The most effective way that I've found so far is to almost kind of not do anything about it. And by that, what I mean is accept that for the most part, only intelligent, self-aware, accomplished people have imposter syndrome. Like, I hate to say it, but that's kind of what I'm seeing, right? That people who have imposter syndrome are actually pretty good at what they do, and they're pretty intelligent and self-aware, and they've got things going for them. And it's because of that self-awareness that they're able to see around and compare themselves to other people and suddenly wonder, like, am I actually good enough? Am I actually any good at all. And that's where that imposter syndrome kicks in. So kind of like almost reframing it as the fact I'm even feeling this means that I'm actually probably okay. It means I actually have morals. I'm actually probably an ethical person who's aware of the standards of my industry and the standards of what I'm meant to be achieving. And actually the fact I have this awareness is already a really good sign. So in that lens, I like to then befriend it and kind of befriend that imposter syndrome as just that kind of self-aware part of me that's, you know, that like little bit of inner perfectionism or that inner kind of driver who's just trying to make me be the best that I can be. And it doesn't mean badly. It doesn't mean to hurt me. It's just trying to look out for me. And it's okay. And you know what? It's probably always going to be there. And that's also okay. I don't really have to do anything with it. So kind of like not doing anything through accepting it.
That's really a unique way to do that. It's almost like taking a failure and instead of, you know, boo-hoo, whine, just turning it around and say, okay, what can I learn from this?
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't, like my own coach said to me the other day, she's like, there is no failure in entrepreneurship. That's just learning. There's no way of getting it right or wrong. Like you can't get it right. Everyone's way is different. Everyone's path is different. Everyone's business and niche and persona is different. So there is no right and wrong. It's just testing what's going to work for you, and what's going to work for you might change. And so there is no failure. It's just feedback. It's just learning. What works for you now might not work for you next time. And that's fine, right? Like that is entrepreneurship. It's being nimble.
And that's what makes us grow.
Mm-hmm.
So if we didn't have those experiences, you know, we wouldn't really grow or get to that next level, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you see as the most common mistake that entrepreneurs make in their relationships? And I'm talking personal and business relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So business-wise, I think the biggest mistake that I see, well, there's kind of two mistakes here that I see. One is if we're talking about co-founder dynamics, is treating the co-founder dynamic like a kind of unique business relationship without actually realizing that the co-founder dynamic is almost more like a marriage. Like truly, when I do co-founder coaching, I'm like, I just bring out the marital coaching pamphlet, because the relationship between two co-founders is so intimate and so intertwined and so vulnerable and so deep that the kind of classical, you know, stakeholder dynamics that we have in the corporate space don't really fly if you're actually going to, you know, have a happy, healthy startup career. So that's kind of one thing, is viewing that co-founder dynamic as something other than what it really is, which is a very vulnerable endeavor between two people who are really putting their all into something that's probably a passion project, and they're going to have to be the strongest team out there to make it work. So that's one. And then the other kind of mistake that I see is almost like the opposite of that, which is going into pure isolation. So I've seen this a few times with my clients, and then it bleeds into the personal life, which is an entrepreneurial life, especially if you're doing it solo, is incredibly lonely. And if you're doing it remote, it can be cripplingly lonely. And so when we are working so hard and we're not seeing the results and we want to get the results, and we know that if we put in the time and put in the effort, we put in the passion, the results will come, and it's just about persevering, we can often silo ourselves into this kind of very isolated lone wolf space, which is terrible for our mental health, but also doesn't actually really help the business, because often it's the connections that will help it grow, right, in that perspective. So that isolation piece is a big one that I see, and that also feeds into the personal dynamics then. So a lot of the people that I work with are founders who have either had an exit, and maybe the exit didn't actually even go so well, right? So they've been grinding and hustling and working so hard for 5 years plus, and at the end of it, the business didn't exit with the proceeds that they were looking to leave with. And they realize that actually they're now quite alone. They might not have a partner. Maybe their marriage fell apart. Maybe they haven't even been with anyone in that time. And there's this kind of awful, awful loneliness that I see. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
How do we get back to that? Let's talk about that for just a minute, because I've been hearing a lot about, you know, COVID really changed a lot of us because it isolated us. where, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't have a lot of people really necessarily to talk to, like personally and things like that. We started a lot of isolation, and that's negatively impacted our communication and our relationships. So let's talk about how do we fix that then?
Yeah, I am such, I mean, it's what I do, right? It's my entire livelihood. I'm such a big believer in relational growth. And there is a difference, I think, that society or kind of we're not really getting, and maybe it'll become more of a thing in the future. But kind of like you said, right? So when COVID happened, when we're in the pandemic, people were getting a lot of mental health support. Like, you know, people were booking therapy. There was a lot of support out there. The difference is, and something that I've seen with myself and I see with my clients, is that when we do solo personal development, so getting that therapy, working with an executive coach, doing our own kind of solo growth and healing, even plant medicine, I mean, whatever you need to grow, it's still different to relational growth. And relational growth is when we are doing that personal development in the lens of how do I show up in my relationships? Because it's very easy to actually think, you know what, I'm healed, I'm great, I'm self-aware, I've got everything going for me, and I'm completely fine, I don't need any more therapy, I don't need any more coaching, when you're doing it on your own. And then you meet someone or you develop a connection, and lo and behold, you realize, I actually don't know what I'm doing here, we're fighting a lot, we're having a lot of disagreements, I'm scared of speaking up, I don't have any boundaries, I'm not happy, blah, 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 right? And so there's a real difference between that kind of individual growth, that solo growth, and relational growth. And we need more of that relational growth. We need to understand, how is it that I show up in relation to others, both in professionally and personally? How is it that I receive others? Like, what are my triggers? How do I show up when I'm triggered? How can I heal and work through my triggers? How can I show up as a better version of me? And how can I better connect with people? And all of this is skills that we have to learn through the lens of relationships, which isn't to say that you have to be in a relationship to do this kind of work. You can absolutely do it on your own, but the lens through within which you're doing it is kind of thinking about, how is it that I show up, and how is it that other people show up to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's say that we got out of the habit of really being and having these relationships. What would be your recommendation for us to be able to maybe reach out and create more of these positive relationships that are healthy for us to have?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first of all, kind of recognizing that, honestly, most people out there, well, maybe not most anymore, but a lot of people out there are lonely, right? So if there's this kind of fear of, oh, I don't want to reach out because I don't want to be a hassle, I don't want to be a burden, the loveliest thing that you can do for most people is going to be to extend an outreach and share some appreciation. Share some appreciation of them, maybe something that they've done, maybe something that they're doing, maybe something that they are, and just extend that appreciation, and then show some vulnerability. And that vulnerability might look like, hey, like, I have no plans for the weekend and I've been working hard all week. And you know what? I would just love to connect with you and spend a bit of time, or I would love to get out of the house and do something fun, or I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed and burnt out. I'd love to just talk, if you're okay with that. But that vulnerability coupled with the appreciation piece is like the most human kind of pure way of connecting with people, right? Because it's really heart-led. And when we can connect with people from that space of being in the heart rather than being up in our heads and thinking like, oh, what are they going to think? And what can I get from them? What can I get from this relationship? It can go a long way. It's a nice way to kind of check yourself and bring yourself back to that heart space and connect from a deeper place.
Yeah, and I think also being vulnerable, people appreciate that because mm-hmm. people always want to help other people.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like, you know, if you're extending some appreciation and then you share some vulnerability, asking for some help, like, why wouldn't they help you, right? Like, it's such a human response to want to help someone who is being kind and again in need. So you can build connections wherever you are in the world. I mean, we live in such an online world that it's amazing the kind of connections that you can build online, even through LinkedIn. I mean, I love LinkedIn. I spent half my life on LinkedIn connecting with people, and there's incredible relationships you can build.
Yeah, that's awesome. Are there any other things that you think are really important for us to take away from today's session that can help us be even more successful?
Yeah, what I think the biggest takeaway, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, is when things feel hard and things feel stressful and you feel isolated and maybe you're burning out, can you bring your awareness and your attention out from your head and down into your body and into your heart space? And I know that might sound really woo-woo and it might sound a little bit like, what's she talking about? But give it a go. Just give it a go and let your energy and your awareness stay there and try operating from that place. Because when you operate from that place, I mean, there's so much science behind it, how just being embodied and being in the body is so much more of a kind of calming, soothing place to be that allows you to slow down, calms your nervous system down. And actually, you probably will show up a lot nicer to other people and they'll feel you being a lot nicer. And those connections that you're looking for will be so much more organic and easeful. It's a really simple practice, but it's something that we don't typically do when we're rushing around building businesses and being productive.
And sometimes we don't even realize that we can be short or harsh or unappreciative, however that may come across to people. And I think if we do, or when we do, what you just said, I mean, I almost felt a calming just by you saying that.
Yeah, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. And I mean, yeah, it's just, if you can do this when you're having an argument or a disagreement, my goodness, like watch the whole dynamic change. The other person will feel it. They will feel that you are in a very steady, calm, heart-centered place. And they will calm down too. It's such a powerful technique. And it's just nice to actually do for yourself as well. So yeah, I'm glad it resonated.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty powerful just in that short amount of time. How would somebody else learn about what you do or get some information about what you do to learn more?
Yeah, so the best ways will be on my website, katarinapolonska.com. Or on my LinkedIn. I don't know how many other people there are with my LinkedIn, but I'm Katarina Polonsky, the Y. And we can find me on Instagram, which is, again, just Katarina Polonska with an A. But a website is probably the easiest place to find all of the different handles there.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your very valuable time today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Really enjoyed being here.
Yeah, it's totally been my pleasure. And Katarina also has a free training available to you on the behavioral science of attraction in all situations, whether it's business and or personal. So I'll put the link in the show notes for you on that free training as well. Now, after investing your very valuable time with Katarina and me, I hope that you gained insights and ideas that will propel you to greater heights in every facet of your life. Now, I salute you for your hunger for more, your drive for wanting to be even better, and your unyielding commitment for being the architect of your destiny. Share the wisdom by passing on my Accountability Coach podcast to help ignite others, which can be found on most podcast platforms and in most English-speaking countries. And subscribe to the Accountability Minute for daily guidance on proven business success principles. Want more proven business success tips and resources? Well, of course you do. Subscribe to my blog by going to accountabilitycoach.com/blog. And always remember to aim for what you want each and every single day. Until next time, make it a great day, today and every day. I appreciate you listening.